This is Cap and Company.
Weekdays, 9 to noon.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Cap and Company right here on ESPN 1000 in the brand new ESPN Chicago app, along with Brian Hanley, Jonathan Hood, we're in for Cap. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Follow us on Twitter as well at TweetJHood at Brian Hanley 534. We got that confirmed, though, Brian, right? Like, Chase Daniel is still the players rep for the Bears.
Yeah, well, but technically he would be under contract till the new March 18th, right, till free agency starts. So, I mean, it seems odd because you don't believe he's coming back, right? So, but he's probably done all the legwork and been in all the union meetings to this point. And, I mean, how many players want that job anyway, right?
What did we find? What did you say, Danny? Did you say that that Aaron Rodgers also is involved?
Yeah.
He's the Packers player rep.
Right. That's out of crazy. About everybody, he's the players rep.
Right.
Surprised he'd had time for that. He's got Danica. He's got the Bucks. He's got the Packers.
Yeah, and he said he's voting no just because that's what the majority of the locker room, the majority guys on the team want him to vote no. So, I mean, he's got his marching orders. Go vote no, Aaron.
Field Yates covers the National Football League for ESPN and ESPN Radio. He joins us right here on Cap and Company. Field, it's Jonathan and Brian. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, gentlemen. How we doing?
We're doing well, thank you. We've been talking about the Bears and what could happen. If you are the Chicago Bears, what do you think is best offensively at the quarterback spot? You have to believe in Mitch, I guess, if you're Ryan Pace, but do you find competition for Trubisky?
I think you have to. I really do, and I understand the sensitivity. I understand that some quarterbacks, when they have a veteran brought aboard, are threatened by it, and it causes them to kind of wilt. But, you know, at this point, just trying to play the power of positivity game doesn't feel to me like something that has worked for Mitch Trubisky. They have backed him publicly and seemingly privately as well. The results have not been consistent enough. So if I am Ryan Pace, I'm thinking about a quarterback market long and hard this offseason.
If you were to handicap the possibility that Mitch would justify Ryan Pace's patience and belief in him, and it happened, can it happen in one off season?
I don't know. It's a good question. The whole Mitch thing is, I would like to go back and find an example of a player at the quarterback position who stayed with the same team and basically was a starter since his rookie year, or at least a portion of it.
Right, 12 starts,
and the thing turned around in year four, right? And I'm not saying it can't happen. We just have a large body of evidence that suggests that, you know, typically these turnarounds don't take place, don't happen. So that's why, you know, the whole quarterback plan, I understand why they're backing him. And I actually believe a lot in Matt Nagy as a head coach. I think he's a really great offensive mind. I just wonder if, you know, the DAC is stacked against him because of the quarterback that he's inherited.
Phil Yates from ESPN joins Jonathan Hood and Brian Hanley on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the new ESPN Chicago app. Phil, we were talking about how fluid how football is. You know, one year it's the San Francisco 49ers, next year it's Seattle, especially the NFC. So how far do you think the Bears are, personnel standpoint, to being at the top again in the conference?
There are a couple question marks on the roster currently that, you know, may answer themselves. So, like, you know, Roquan Smith, when he plays, is a really talented player, had sort of an interesting second season. But, like, if we had complete confidence in Roquan being back to the player that we know he can be, well, then all of a sudden you've got, like, a legit blue-chip defensive player that can be a huge, huge piece of your future going forward. I know the numbers said a different story about Khalil Mack as compared to where he was in his first year with the Bears, but you're still talking about one of the five best defensive players in football who's incredible. So the roster has a lot of the requisite ingredients, but, like, it's hard to not just make this simple, even if I want to try to wow people with different levels of insight or something that hasn't been said before. But, you know, I think about the Bears, I think about the Bills, for example, two teams that have made an investment in a quarterback. Now, Buffalo, I know, has, you know, there's a lot more confidence right now in Josh Allen than there is in Mitch Trubisky, and they have performed differently. But the Bills' ceiling is tapped into if Josh Allen goes to the next level. The Bears' ceiling is tapped into if Mitch Trubisky can either get back to whatever level we sort of saw in 2018, or if you can just avoid cratering. So I think the Bears roster is close enough if the quarterback doesn't play poorly. And I know that sounds ridiculous and silly and probably oversimplifying things, but I kind of feel like it's obvious for a reason, is what I would say.
How did they get a running game going, if in fact they want to get a running game going? Because a lot of us aren't sure that they will ever commit to that. And I like you, I like Matt Nagy. I think he's a great offensive mind, but he does seem reticent to want to run the ball or make that commitment.
You know, I think it's a sort of a tricky one, right? Because we just saw a team win the Super Bowl, and you know, I know they did run the football. I know Damian Williams was great for the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But, like, if you look at the Chiefs' run-pass splits and you look at the way that they use the pass to set up the run as opposed to the other way around, like, I think there's evidence that you don't just need to be able to establish the run to get things going, you know? So I think that maybe if there was a different back on the roster, they might have a little bit more time or a little bit more ability to do so? Yes, but maybe David Montgomery is closer to the player that they seem to indicate he was going to be last year when they traded up in the third round to get David Montgomery. I thought that at that point we had a lot of reasons to believe in him as a solid piece of the Bears foundation. But we'll see on the running the football. I don't know that it's quite as simple as more attempts is better. I think it might be threatening a defense with the run as opposed to just using it on occasion to gain a few yards in a cloud of dust.
Phil Yates with us on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I'm not asking what Tom Brady's going to do. I'm not asking what the Patriots going to do. Field, if you were Tom Brady, what would you do?
Well, I start by saying, like, don't know that it doesn't matter what I would do.
No, yes, it does.
But as you guys know.
Yes, it does, because I asked you. What if you're Tom Brady, what would you do?
Fair enough, Jonathan. All right, fair enough. I agree. I would stay in New England. But that's oversimplifying things probably, because I'm saying, hey, you know, what's my best chance to win another Super Bowl, which would get me to seven, which would actually catapult the Patriots as a franchise for the most ever in the NFL. It would cement his legacy. By the way, I think Tom Brady's legacy is already cemented fully, but it would further cement the legacy if Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. All things that you guys know and everybody else knows that's listening to this interview right now. But I think if I'm 42 years old, I don't know that I want to spend too much time upsetting the apple cart, rethinking or having to sort of adjust to a new life somewhere else. I mean, Tom Brady has been spending the past few off seasons away from the Patriots facility. I wonder, and part of that is because he wants to make more of a commitment to his family. He's got, you know, a growing family. His children are in school, and he wants to spend more time with them. Let's just say you sign with, you know, insert any team you want, Tennessee. Like, is that really the first thing you want to do, is sign somewhere and then not be present while everybody else that's your new teammates is getting accustomed to what you bring to them? So maybe I'm just oversimplifying things. I keep using that term, but I think if I'm Tom Brady, I'm staying in New England.
See, that's what I talked about, Brian. I think that makes sense. He's got the tough dad in Belichick. No matter what disconnect is going on in New England, just come back for one more year and finish it out.
There's got to be some cachet with staying with the organization, sure, won all the Super Bowls with, right? I mean, it's not about money. I don't know, unless you felt insulted on how this thing's played out and felt like they've been trying to push out the door for the past couple seasons. I don't know, when you look at this field, how you feel about that?
Yeah, I don't, you know, what I'm having sort of a, I don't know if it's a struggle, but the thing about the Brady situation that is probably the most difficult to size up is that you don't know what is. So there are people that are speaking, even Jeff Darlington, who is doing a great job for us at ESPN. You know, I think everything that everybody is saying is carefully worded, right? I mean, you know, Jeff using the term, he would be stunned, for example, today. It's like, I think people are probably receiving information that sort of guides them down a path, but there's been nothing definitive, which makes the whole Brady thing really difficult to figure out. I don't know that this has been, there hasn't been a wedge driven between Tom Brady and the Patriots. I mean, I think some of that stuff tends to get a little bit overrated, but we've been talking about it for months, and the good news is, probably in 3 weeks, this is all resolved, and we know where Tom Brady is going to be playing, which is good news.
Phil, from a pure football and fantasy football standpoint, which player that's going to be in this draft are you looking forward to seeing on the field the most?
Well, running backs have the best chance to make an early fantasy impact, just because it's a position where there's not nearly the same assimilation process as we have seen with things, other spots, tight end and wide receiver specifically. So J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State, DeAndre Swift out of Georgia probably have the best chance at fantasy impact early, but all the wide receivers are interesting because there's so many of them. Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs from Alabama might be the top two. You can make a case for some of these other guys that are also going to run fast, jump high, CeeDee Lamb out of Oklahoma, but then the list just keeps going and going and going. So the wide receiver class probably will define this class, both in real and fantasy football going forward, but I think the guys that have the best chance at an immediate impact are the running backs.
Do you believe the Players Association is going to ratify the new CBA and all the things that come with it, including increased money, but increased regular season games, increased playoff possibilities? And do you believe the fans actually care about adding to the playoffs? Obviously, the owners do, because that means maybe double the TV revenue when it gets down to it.
Fans care about football games. I don't say none of them care at all about the stuff that takes place, but they care more about the games than they care more about the labor piece than they do, I think, some of the nitty gritty in a lot of cases. But yes, I think this gets voted through by the players. It might take a little bit of time, but yes, I do believe it will go through at some point in the near future.
Phil, we're glad you spent some time with us talking some football. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks.
Phil Yates from ESPN with us here on Cap and Company. Yeah, he's talking about Jeff Darlington, who was on Get Up, talking about how he would be shocked if Brady goes back to New England.
I feel like we need to have a talk here. Because no matter how many times we say that Tom Brady is likely to not play for the Patriots next year, I either get blasted or told that I am wrong. That makes sense, because we cannot wrap our heads around it. There are people very close to Tom Brady who are being told by Tom Brady, it's not going to happen. Like, I'm going somewhere else. Like, that's the way that we're operating here within those circles. And yet even those people don't necessarily believe that Tom, at the end of the day, won't go into Bill Belichick's office and Belichick won't sit there and say to him, Tom, we need you back. We have to have you back. And that Tom Brady will return to the Patriots. We need to wrap our minds around the fact that it is far more likely than not that Tom Brady will not be back with the Patriots. I am now at the point where I would be stunned if Tom Brady returns to the Patriots.
Is that fact or opinion?
You think he knows something? Thinks he's...
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Now, I don't know if that was fact wrapped around opinion or not. All I know is that it makes sense for me, if I'm Tom Brady, just go back to New England. Don't complicate your career. Your legacy's already set. Do you know how many barroom conversations that we've had, the fight over Elway versus Montana versus Fouts, trying to or Kelly? Or
how many conversations, debates we've had? Is it Belichick or is it Tom Brady?
Right.
Who's more important to that equation?
Brady's blown all that conversation out of the water.
Right.
Because all of his championships. The reason why it's a topic, because he's 43 and you're trying to figure out, does he have anything left in the tank? And if he goes someplace else, will he just be not even close to being the player that he was even when he was 39 or 40?
And
43.
Is that team built around him ready to win another championship if he does return?
Probably not.
Yeah. See that?
Probably not. Coming up next, we talk about your guy, Stan Bowman. Stan Bowman. If there's going to be a rebuild, will he be overseeing it? We're going to find out next. We talk a little hockey.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports.
Let me introduce myself.
Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN _ Chicago.
Shot or no shot, coming up at 10:33 right here on ESPN 1000 with Brian Hanley, Jonathan Hood with you. In for Cap, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone number. The Hawks will take on Tampa. Nice early dinner, 6 o'clock. We'll be able to sit there and watch that, a little wine.
Hopefully the Lightning don't make a feast of the Blackhawks.
Three Stanley Cups. Championships. It's the closest thing we've seen to the Bulls championships because of the amount of championships that were won. 9 straight playoffs, and then, of course, Quinville. So let's rewind the tape. Let's go all the way back. Well, Dennis Savard, my favorite Blackhawk, because that's my era. That's
one of my favorite guys, Savvy.
Yeah. That's Savard, Larmer, Secord, Bannerman, O'Callaghan.
One of the best nights was covering his Hall of Fame induction up in Toronto.
That's number 18 is my guy. And to see him coach the Blackhawks is like, oh, that's great. But then when you knew Quinville was sitting in the stands there as a scout, you just knew something was happening. You just knew something was cooking, right?
Sure, right. I mean, he's there in the organization. He's the heir apparent, if you will, if things don't work out. It's interesting. Stan Bowman, obviously, is still the GM and doesn't appear that anyone's unhappy with Stan's performance. Although you look in the past few years, he's had a couple misses that were rather large, including the Artemi Panarin for Brandon Saad deal.
Mm-hmm.
That one's going to go down in the books as one of the worst trades in the last 10 years, if not in the organization's history. As good a player as Brandon Saad is, he's not Artemi Panarin at this point. But, yeah, it looks like you launched the Hall of Fame coach in Q. You were able to do that. You know, the time ran out on him after the championships. Does the clock tick for the general manager as well?
The question was asked to Bowman on the Cap and Company, how do you get the Hawks back to greatness? And he said,
well, you know, first off, we haven't written off this year. We have about a quarter of our season remaining. We certainly have to play well, and we have to get a number of wins to get ourselves back into that race. But we're still within striking distance. So that, in the short term, that's the important thing, is we've got to remain competitive and have our players pushing to leave it on the ice every night and make a strong push to get in the playoffs. And I think that's the small picture, the big picture. We do need to try to continue to incorporate younger players and assemble a group of assets, younger players that can grow into a big part of a successful team. So if you look back at those years, 2007, 2008, 2009, we had a group of young players that came from our minor league system. They emerged together, and then they had a long run staying together in Chicago, and that's what we're trying to do. And you wish it would happen quickly. It's not fast enough for anybody, but we're doing the best we can to try to accelerate that process, recognizing that you can't really put a timetable on it because young players develop at different rates.
So that has somewhat of a cop-out feel to it, Brian, because if you are the general manager and you're on a radio show, you're pretty confident that the acceleration of your young talent in the minor leagues will be able to step in and be able to pay dividends. Not saying what kind of dividends, but it can pay dividends. That feeling of, well, you got to wait and see. You're giving yourself an out. You're giving yourself time in the job, I think.
Well, I guess he gets credit because we beat up Jim Boylan saying wins and losses don't matter. So when the general manager's on here talking about getting back to greatness, he starts off with, well, we can still be a playoff team this year, even though realistically they can't be a playoff team. They're not going to be a playoff team this year, I'll rephrase it. But he still wants to throw that out there, those crumbs out there to be eaten up, if you want to believe it. But this does feel like he just described a full-on rebuild, didn't he, Jonathan?
He did.
Talking about putting together that next core group, young guys who are going to take time, so fasten your seatbelts. It's not going to happen next year.
He sounds like Krause after the Jordan years.
Yeah. Organizations win championships. And there's another storyline, too. Does Patrick Kane want to stick around for the full-on rebuild? Because he had some interesting comments in The Athletic the other day saying, well, that's a conversation that I should have or we should talk about. And Stan's response was, you know, go ahead and you play. You know, you're a great player. I respect you. But basically, let me do my job. You don't need to worry about that. I'll manage the team. You go ahead and play and we'll be fine. So when you look at this thing, growing that core group like you did with Taves and Kane and all the young players, that sounds like they're on a full-on rebuild to get another championship or two. And that would take not 1 year or two seasons, maybe three or four seasons till that comes to fruition, if it does.
Here's what I'm trying to hold on to the skates of Kane, Taves, Duncan Keith, and those good times. I guess the question is, does Stan deserve another bite of the apple and an opportunity to rebuild this thing? And I'm not saying he can't. It's just frustrating because I could see the Hawks not making the playoffs in the next 3-4 years, and that means that it won't be the hot spot anymore. I'm not going to say this, we're going to go back to 4,000 or 5,000 people, Brian, but you have a hot product still, even though the team's not in the playoffs. The building's still full. You still want to go backwards as a franchise.
Was it the Bruins game last week? Where they actually set an attendance record for that game, right?
Yeah, original six.
Yeah, you couldn't squeeze any more people in the building, so they're fortunate. And the Bulls were able to do this amazingly for 20-something years after the championship, where it was their consecutive string of sellouts led the league, right?
Right.
So the fan base is still on board. And look, the in-game product, the just the entire experience over there, it's terrific, right? You go there, you're going to come out entertained whether the game was good or not. You're going to have a good experience for the most part. But to answer your question, how long does that last? Because now the Bulls are looking at announced crowds of 17,000 or so, and there aren't that many people in the United Center. You see whole sections that have a lot of empty rows and empty seats. So those days are over. Maybe that is why they seem to have a sense of urgency to start doing something different, because they're now feeling it in the bank account. They're now feeling it in the front office, because the revenue streams are not what they were, what they became accustomed to. So, I mean, I think the Blackhawks fans will still give John McDonough and his staff, a couple more years of good grace to get this thing right. But not going to make the playoffs this year. If they don't make the playoffs next year, when you're going to write that check for season tickets, do you think twice about it? Do you go, well, man, that's a lot of money, and we haven't been to the playoffs in a long time, and I don't see how we're getting back there. Do I want to spend that money?
With Brian Hanley, Jonathan Hood with you on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the brand-new ESPN Chicago app. So if we take a look at the core, we've been talking about cores a lot with our Chicago sports teams. So Kane, Taves, Duncan Keith, Brandon Saad is one of the best forwards. Connor Murphy evolved into a top four defenseman. So you've got your guys. But the Leonard trade is still in the back of my mind, because it's like in that core, in that rebuild, you want to have a veteran quality goaltender. I'm not saying that they can't find one, but Leonard was that guy. I know you got to pay through the nose to be able to keep him, and I think Crawford is kind of a goaltender of the past. Like, if you're trying to get better and younger, like, Crawford more than likely will go someplace else. But why can't Leonard come back? Because I not only a good goaltender, but a bright personality, a little bit of a different quirky personality.
Oh yeah, and his teammates say we miss it already. We miss the Jonathan Taves, of all people, said you knew when he was in the dressing room, right? And not in a bad way. He enjoyed that, because there are a lot of quiet guys on that team, including Jonathan Taves to a degree. Mm-hmm. When you look at, I don't know how they left the negotiations with Robin Leonard, because there were so many mixed signals before Robin Leonard started tweeting out after the fact, after the trade, that, well, they never brought up money. You know, I was willing to take 3 years, because the reports prior to that was that Robin Leonard and his agent wanted 6 or 7 years, long-term deal, and the Hawks weren't willing to go there. But we all assumed they knew what the money was. We all assumed a guy in his prime like that, playing at the top of his game, was going to get $6 or $7 million a year. But he said, no, we didn't even talk about money. So does he have a bad taste in his mouth? Have they just said, we're moving on? Or is his love for the Blackhawks in the city such that they can come back and talk about a three-year deal? I mean, 3 weeks ago, Robin Leonard said, I'm not giving anyone any discounts. It's time for me to get paid.
And can't blame him, right?
Well, but NHL players normally don't talk that way. Yeah. Even they might feel it. They normally don't come out and just say that, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how that was received, but obviously now he's in Las Vegas. Corey Crawford wouldn't be the worst option. If you're in a full-blown rebuild here, if he's playing the way he's playing right now, I mean, that would be more than serviceable for the next season or two, right?
And next season. He's 35.
Right, he's 35.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's going to get 2 years from somebody, right? I mean, it may be, it's going to be a reduced salary. But if you're trying to keep fan base somewhat happy, okay, we won championships with Corey Crawford. Mm-hmm. A good goalie, or goalie playing at the level he's playing, can take you a long way and cover up a lot of the blemishes on a rebuild as well, and at least keep you competitive and keep people interested for a large part of the season, if not the entirety of the season.
I'd just like to see you, you know. And by the way, is the old man Bowman around? Does he still hang around? I know this is.
I don't think he hangs around. I don't think he's hung around a long time. I think he's living in Florida. I mean, Scotty's got to be what, in his 80s?
Still got good hockey thoughts, though, to impart to Stan, right? Does he have a little conversation here and there?
Well, absolutely. Look, if I'm Stan Bowman, I'm picking up the phone asking my dad, if I have any doubt about what I should do,
right.
Why wouldn't you talk to the guy who named you after the Stanley Cup,
right?
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Scotty Bowman, I assume, is still watching games on TV. Mm-hmm. He's not living in Chicago. He doesn't have, I don't think, back in the old days, remember when they used to say, we don't do anything around here unless we check with Tommy Ivan.
Right.
Right. I'm not making that up, right?
Right.
And Tommy had to be in his 90s.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, you open the door and Tom, yeah, what? Yeah, okay, yeah, go ahead and trade Yves St. Laroux or wherever. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, Danny told me he's 86.
86.
All right, but still, if the TV still works, I'm sure he's watching.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Hey, Dad, it's me, Stan. What do you think we should do with the Hawks? Is Guy Lafleur still available?
He's a good netminder.
And Bobby Orr. You know, they got Bobby Orr on one leg one time.
Yes, yeah. They did.
Yeah.
I'm just concerned about what the next generation of Blackhawks hockey is, because I look at it almost like the NFL in a lot of ways, where, yeah, the Hawks can get right back there, but like when? Is it going to be 4 or 5 years? How long does Stan is in that chair to be able to rebuild
it? It goes back to our conversation, which team is going to be the next playoff team, or likely to be a next playoff team? And you know, you thought this year was the year, right? Because mm-hmm. they told us it was going to be the year because they were tired of not making the playoffs. And then, obviously, that didn't happen. So they need a lot to get back to Stanley Cup conversations.
But it only starts when you have the head coach in place for the rebuild, right?
That's true.
Unless it's transitional and Colleton stays.
Well, if Stan's not in his office, Jeremy Colleton's not behind the bench. No one's going to take that job and be told, here's your coach. I don't believe any GM worth his salt is not coming in. And God bless Jeremy Colleton. That, you know, I think maybe it's a tough act to follow Q if you're an established coach, right?
Right.
And he says he doesn't hear the noise. And look, his name gets, when it's introduced before the game, he's introduced, you hear the boos from the fans.
That's bad.
I mean, he can tune it out all he wants, but any GM that, if they were going to replace Stan Bowman, I don't think they are, but if they were, and this job's very attractive, it wouldn't be like the Bulls shopping for the third guy with the Pacers. They'd go out and get the top guy available.
312-332-ESPN is our telephone number. Shot or No Shot is coming up next, right here on Cap and Company.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Cap and Company.
Something? Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
That's why I say emanation.
Shot. No Shot. With David Kaplan on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
That's why I say emanation.
This is Cap and Company right here on ESPN 1000 and the brand new ESPN Chicago app with Brian Hanley. Jonathan Hood, we're in for David today. It is time for Shot or No Shot. We'll hear from Jesse Rogers coming up at 11 o'clock with his thoughts from camp with the Chicago Cubs. But now we turn over to the veteran newsman Dan Zetterman with Shot or No Shot.
Gentlemen, Bears general manager Ryan Pace is...
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for checking in.
You look nice in that vest. It's a good look for you.
Thank you. It's a vest to protect myself from all the shots you give me.
Or no shots. Bears general
It's so hard to do this. Why is it hard? You're just talking to the mic.
When the magnificent smiling face of yours like beaming at me.
You just open mouth say things. That's what you're supposed
to
do.
Put out of context.
With Hanley. Bears general manager Ryan Pace is working with about $26.3 million in cap space this offseason. It appears the Bears and other teams will be able to get salary cap hikes of about $20 million if the new CBA is passed. If that happens, the Bears will have more flexibility just before the shopping spree opens on March 18th. So I ask you, gentlemen, shot or no shot, a higher salary cap would give the Bears room to be much more aggressive in their search for a quarterback and perhaps sign a starter.
Shot. What do you think, Brian? I say shot.
No shot, because it's a philosophical thing first. If you don't believe you need that guy, or worse yet, if you believe that that's going to further hurt Mitch Trubisky because he can't handle the pressure of a guy coming in here competing for the job, you're not going down that road no matter what it costs you, whether it's a $20 million cap hit or a $30 million cap hit. And by the way, they're 23rd in cap space right now. That every team's going to get that $20 million boost. So 22 teams in front of them are going to have that much more money to spend on whatever their needs are going to be, including quarterback.
But it's shot if it's Case Keenum, though. It was a low-end guy.
Why would you do that?
Anybody. Better than anybody but Mitch for some people, right?
Wow. I'm not there yet.
Right.
But talk to me, you know, in October. Maybe after the first 5-6 games, anybody but Mitch.
But by that time the door will be closed. It won't be anybody. You got Tyler Bray. That's all you'll have.
You got that campaign going.
Tyler Bray. I mean, if Pace had his druthers, that's who he'd go with, because he wants to make sure that Mitch is free and clear.
Yeah,
it's all.
Well,
him.
That's what I'm saying. It's not money. It is money. Mitch is going to get $9.2 million this year.
Yep.
His cap hit. So if you're talking about someone actually coming in to compete, now you're talking another $20 million invested into that position. Okay? I don't think it starts with Ryan Pace doesn't even want that guy in at Hal's Hall. So whether you could afford a $25 million quarterback, if the GM doesn't believe it's necessary, it's not going to happen.
Dan Zetterman. Dan?
Gentlemen, sticking with the Bears. Morning. The Bears drafted tight end Adam Shaheen in the second round of the NFL draft 3 years ago and unfortunately are once again on the lookout for an upgrade at the position. Both Mel Kiper and Todd McShay do not have a tight end going in the first round in their respective mock drafts. Mm-hmm. The last time there were no tight ends in the first round was in 2016. The Bears have two second-round picks, so I ask you guys, shot or no shot, Ryan Pace will be gun-shy to take a tight end in the second round after the failed Adam Shaheen experiment.
No shot. If he is, he ought to clean out his desk right now. Seriously, if you're afraid to go down the road, you need... Look, did we say Trey Burton, 14 receptions? That was the most as a tight end on the team? Mm-hmm. And what, 91?
Ben Broniker and guys like Holtz.
J.P. Holtz, 91 receiving yards as a tight end.
That's a very difficult right team. That Holtz, right?
No, a different one.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Are you kidding? I mean, you have to go get a tight end. And Cole Kmet, I mean, he's going to go in the second round, right?
Yes.
He'll go right about where the Bears are selecting with the 43 overall pick. That's right in the neighborhood of where he should go. So, I mean, that's a marriage made in heaven. You have to get that position right.
Yeah, you...
Especially with Matt Nagy's offense.
Especially when you start with zero.
Yes.
At the position. So, Danny, I would say that you shouldn't be gun-shy. You know it's something that Mitch needs for this offense. It's just a safety valve that he can throw out to.
It's Matt Nagy needs it for this offense.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have that guy.
Shouldn't be just because you missed a couple times. You still got to go for it. Dan?
All right, gentlemen, the NFL Combine is going on as we speak. Vic Fangio, former defensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears and current head coach of the Denver Broncos, is challenging the importance of the Combine. He is leaving his assistant coaches back in Denver to watch tape instead of taking in the Combine festivities. In addition, Rams head coach Sean McVay is veering from the usual. He is only going to the Combine for one day, then he's returning to Los Angeles to work with his new coordinators. So I ask you guys, shot or no shot, the Combine as we know it is losing its importance and will soon become a non-factor when it comes to the draft.
No shot. No, that's still important. Fangio apparently doesn't want to do his job. Okay, I guess he is too sleepy in Indianapolis for him to sit there and actually evaluate talent. That says a lot for his team, too. What are you doing, pal? You mean so Elway's allowing this? Like, I don't need to go because your team's not ready to win a Super Bowl anytime soon. You're still not sure about the quarterback situation. You need to sit there and evaluate with everyone else. What are you doing?
But a lot of the best players don't work out. A lot of the best players, they show up for the meetings, the interviews, but they're not throwing footballs or doing the jumps and the runs.
Well, there's twofold here, Danny. I'm with Jonathan. No shot. First of all, the NFL is all about commanding the entire calendar. They have it spaced out, so they're always a topic of conversation. These 2 weeks, the weeks leading up to the combine itself, whether it's Burrow, small hands, whatever stories come out of there, they're happy people are talking about it, right?
Jeez.
First, and the other part of the equation is the coaches do have to show up to give non-answers to questions for one day because that, again, gives the NFL all the publicity you could hope for. And we're talking about, fans are responding to it, whether it's legitimate substance or not. And the other part, Indianapolis, the reason they have it there is because of all the hospitals and medical facilities they have to accommodate whether the guys are out there throwing or participating in the drills. They have to go through all the medicals.
Yeah.
And they do sit up in the GM suite and get your 15, 20 minutes with each team that's interested in talking to you. So there is a reason. Maybe all the assistant coaches don't have to show up because, as you said, Danny, the top players aren't participating. But your staff shows up to talk and interview these guys and find out whether, you know, that they're a fit for the team or there's a red flag there that they have to investigate. So there's due diligence to be done. There are medical tests to be passed. And also the NFL loves the fact that they're the center of the sports world in the middle of February.
But it's a well-crafted
late February.
But it's a well-crafted question by Newsman. You know why? Because he gave you old school Fangio and new school McVay.
And yeah, they're on the same page. Don't want to show up in Indianapolis.
McVay's there, but he's got to go back to his getting his tan.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why he goes to Los Angeles. That's very well crafted, very sneaky. That's what you try. You gave me the old school and the new school approach.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Very well crafted.
Appreciate that. Let's move on to baseball, shall we? Much is being made of the Astros players getting plunked in the first week of spring training. Oh. Through yesterday, Houston players were hit by a total of 7 pitches in 5 games. That is the most of any team so far in spring training. I ask you guys, shot or no shot, this trend of heavily hitting Astros players will carry on through the regular season.
Shot. It will continue. I don't know how long it will continue, but it will continue. I know one thing. A few more plunkings, and Dusty's going to swallow his toothpick.
He's,
he's interrupting his time of eating fruit right there in the dugout. But nonetheless, I think this is going to happen. And I've said this, Brian.
Who did the plunking? Was it like double-A guys who are thrown off the mound?
Good question. It has been a majority of minor leaguers.
Right, because first of all, a lot of the regular guys are thrown back bullpen sessions at this point. So, you know, those pitches could have just got away from a guy who's not going to see
you. just got away.
Yeah, you know, high and inside. Who got hit in the back yesterday, right? Was that
Altuve a couple days ago, right?
Yeah.
He got hit.
Yeah.
But, I, you know, I've always felt that baseball or any sport needs to have guys with black hats. If the Astros are the bad guy, if they're the heels, fine. You know, I think that's good for the sport. For the first couple of months, people will be tuning in just to see what's going on with the Astros. Not the cheating, but just to see if there's going to be a little brouhaha, a little kerfuffle.
Well, did you see they were confiscating signs? A bunch of fans were showing up for the Astros game with signs to call them cheaters and everything else, and they were taking them at the gate, wouldn't allow them in the stadium. So it would be interesting to see if that's a directive from the commissioner's office to make sure that. But we know that the boos are going to happen, and that's not ending in May. That's going to, every time they're on the road and they roll into town, I don't care if it's the second time around, they're going to get booed every time that they show up, and well, they should. I mean, the fans should have a long memory, as much as Rob Manfred thought this was going to go away in a week. Good luck to him.
I like the idea of Dusty getting the old Tupperware out and got the plum.
He already said, hey, you got to help us out. My guys are going to get hit. Well, you know, sorry.
He called that early. He's like, hey, I don't want this to happen, and it's happening a lot.
Yeah.
If you're going to have him plunked in the in spring training, just have some double-A pitcher do it. What are you going to do to him? What's that? They're going to affect his career one way or the other. So that's a shot or no shot right here on ESPN 1000. Anything else, Dan?
That's all I got for you, gentlemen.
Yeah, you have no other ancillary question, any auxiliary question?
No, I'm sorry.
I don't understand. Why is it all? You always should have like an extra just in case. Where's the extra?
When you've been doing shot or no shot as long as I have, you know how it times out perfectly to fit in a segment. You know, trim the fat.
Oh, fat joke. Thanks.
Appreciate
it. All right.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
I'm trying.
It's Cap and Company. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Company right here on ESPN 1000 and the brand new ESPN Chicago app. We're going to hear from Jesse Rogers coming up at 11 o'clock, getting his thoughts about the Cubs. The White Sox, on the other hand, I asked Jason Benetti earlier, Brian, about the voice of the Chicago White Sox, by the way, Jason Benetti. He of the White Sox Benettis. I asked him about his favorite offseason move for the Sox, because there were a number of them.
Yasmani Grandal, Jeff, for me, was like a bang, writ large in the sky, we're coming for you situation. The day he signed, the response I got on my phone, on Twitter, social media, but just people like randomly coming up to me over the next couple days, it was substantial, just excited about, number one, the player, right? Like, Yasmani Grandal is an all-star in Major League Baseball. Number two, the Sox went out early and got a guy that they wanted. And not only that, it was a guy the fan base wanted last year. So there's that added benefit of, hey, we've wanted this guy. thanks for listening. And also, we acted early, especially considering the way baseball off seasons had gone the last couple of years, when there's this dull period and sort of a comatose off season. The Sox went out and shattered that. And so in so many ways, that was my favorite signing so far.
JD and I talking to Jason Benetti, the voice of the White Sox. Grandal, you could put him in that category, but also for me, just because to me, the start of the Cubs' run was started with the signing of John Lester.
Right.
Lester didn't have to do it. He didn't have, because look at the organization at the time. Like, I'm not so sure. But you trust Theo, and so Lester trusted him, and so that was the beginning of it. I really believe that when you get Dallas Keuchel in here for what I think is a sweetheart deal, 3 years plus, you know, Reinsdorf's not going to go to the five-year route anymore after the John Danks situation.
Why, for the longest time, they were adamant that 3 years was the max they would go on any pitcher. I remember when I was covering the White Sox in the winter meetings, Ron Shuler was there. I think he was on his fifth cigarette, and Greg Maddux was, you know, obviously was not going to resign. Larry Holmes was not going to resign him with the Cubs because he was going to go out and change the world otherwise. So Greg Maddux was in the Bronx, and Gene Michael was driving him around looking for a nice house to live in while he was going to be wearing Yankee pinstripes, which never happened. But I remember Shuler saying, I think we're down in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, yeah, we're talking to Maddux. I'm like, what? But that's the point where they were only offering, whether you're Greg Maddux or not, mm-hmm. 3 years. So I'm like, you're not talking to Greg Maddux, because he had a five-year deal from the Yankees. He had the Braves were in on him, obviously. So, yeah, he's going to come over to the White Sox for 3 years instead of 5 years guaranteed after wanting to get paid from the Cubs. But yes, so then when they finally break that 3-year rule, it's John Danks.
Exactly.
Maybe we had it right the first time. You know, they were always worried about pitchers getting hurt, so therefore they, you know, weren't going to go 4 or 5 years. But the rest of the league had moved on to that.
I think that was the beginning of it, though. As much as I like Giolito on the team, Dylan Cease is still, again, not sure whether or not he's going to be in as a fifth starter.
You can't teach a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, but
it's got to move, though.
You've got to command it, and then yeah, everything else works off of that. But, yeah, hopefully that's this year is the year for him.
Keuchel was the guy at the top of the list. That, okay, that guy. But then you get Grandal, and that's no shot at James McCann, because McCann, I thought, was a leader in that clubhouse last year. Grandal can really make a difference, though, not just as a guy that can receive and catch well, but also be that power guy the Sox have been looking for.
Will Keuchel throw at the Astros?
Yes. Yes, he will. Yes, he will. You know why? Because Kenny will tell him.
That's it. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine? Who was the thing? Ozzie told some young pitcher to drill somebody?
Yeah, I don't know if it was Matt Albert, but it was like some guy says, go hit him, and then he never did the job.
And didn't he just leave the clubhouse? He knew that he was in trouble.
Yes.
It was the last time he was in a White Sox uniform, right?
He missed. That's what happened. The kid missed.
He didn't want to hit him.
Yeah, right.
Right. So, yeah, he tried to.
So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. Again, 82, 83 wins for the Sox, but when you take a look at that lineup, and it starts with Tim Anderson. How odd of a personality is Tim Anderson? I talked to him during Sox Fest. Brian, he doesn't really like baseball that much.
Really?
Not a baseball guy. And I know that sounds strange, right? But when you talk to him, his interests are fashion, mm-hmm. kind of like the NBA. Like fashion, mm-hmm. family, food, all those other things. But baseball is like fourth or fifth.
Well, food for the family would have to come from the baseball money, right?
Right.
Had a pretty good season last year.
Yeah. But his interests are other things besides baseball, which makes him somewhat cool to a younger fan base, right? It's not the swag of Javi Baez that his arrow's going to be up and he's going to be the face of this franchise if he isn't right now. But Tim Anderson's a little bit of a different swag where it's like, baseball is what I do. It's not who I am.
Well, and if everyone in baseball is okay with that, because even maybe 15, 20 years ago, the last thing a GM wanted to hear or a manager wanted to hear was guys had other interests. They actually had a life outside of baseball. Right?
Here's looking at you, Doug Glanville.
I'm seriously, right?
Glanville was a smart guy.
Yeah.
And he was passed over because he was educated. That's what he told me.
I'll tell you a story, and this goes back again to early 90s. I were on the Cubs bus in New York, mm-hmm. coming from LaGuardia. We'd just flown in, I think, from Montreal. So a charter, lands late, whatever. And Tom Treblehorn was a coach, not the manager at the time, right? And he was talking about what he would do on the off day in New York. He's talking about going to the museums or whatever. And you should have seen some of the other coaches look at him like he's from Mars. Like, you're going to do what? You know,
yeah.
Why don't you come drinking with us? Or, I mean, it's like, you know, because he was a history teacher, right?
Glanville?
No, Treblehorn.
Treblehorn, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
I mean, he had actually, you know, was a little bit cultivated and had things he'd like to do in New York. And, I mean, but that stuff, if he did have other interests, you weren't supposed to actually talk about him.
That's so weird about sports, too. You're supposed to just have that one lane and have no other interest besides drinking and carousing.
Yeah.
That, I mean, but otherwise, you know, for a smart guy like Glanville, and he told me, I mean, because Glanville, I believe, went to Penn, if I'm not mistaken. And he gets drafted, but he dropped. He was very talented, but they thought, hey, this guy wants to be a writer, write books and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, what about the ball, wall, ball? What about that?
Yeah.
Like that what Pearsall was trying to teach him.
Yeah, see, you know, that was also in the red flag at the time. Well, whatever's talent, we don't really need that guy in the clubhouse.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what it all comes down. And also an underrated signing was Jose Abreu for the next 3 years, kind of like the new age Konerko, first base or DH, whatever.
Not only
I think
that,
he's good.
I just want to be here. I mean, how many guys don't say I want to get paid? He didn't care what they paid him. And so it's great to have them around. So,
this portion of Cap and Company is brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Through life's ups and downs, and for all of the journeys ahead, you know what to bring, the card that you can count on, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois. Well, coming up, we'll hear from Jesse Rogers on the Sox and the Cubs from Arizona. That's next with Brian Hanley, Jonathan Hood, here on Cap and Company.
This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Back in 2 minutes.